Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Trechik, and I represent Cornell Rosario as the Special Administrator of the Estate of Mark Rosario. May it please the Court and Counsel. We're here, Your Honors, because we believe that the underlying Circuit Court inappropriately dismissed this case on summary judgment, in part because the facts and inferences weren't read and taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and in part because we believe the underlying court relied on law that was not good law, specifically the Gibbs case. We're here, unfortunately, to discuss tragic facts that resulted in the death of a young man who took his own life in the back of a squad by cutting his throat from ear to ear with a scalpel blade. A scalpel blade that had been in the possession of a deputy a short time before the trek that resulted in his death. A scalpel blade that, although was in the possession of a deputy, and the deputy was unable to identify the scalpel blade, he saw writing on the package and decided not to read the clear and unambiguous language that was written on that package, labeling it as a scalpel blade. This is a 14th Amendment case in which we allege the defendants unlawfully deprived Mark Rosario of his life and liberty without due process of law.
So you agree that to be deliberately indifferent, one has to consciously disregard a known risk, right? That's the law we're operating under.
Well, yes, Your Honor. We agree that we need to prove these matters. One, that the harm to plaintiff was objectively serious, and the case law is replete that suicide satisfies that.
Right. And you've conceded that the officers didn't know it was that kind of blade, right? Because the officer saw it, didn't read the label, and as I understand the facts, put it in the shoe of your client with the anticipation that it was going to be inventory, you know, and that it was not going back to your client.
Well, I don't know if I'd agree with the second part of that, Your Honor. Yes, I don't argue that they knew it was a scalpel blade, although it was properly labeled and they didn't read it. Both deputies that were in that hospital room agreed that they violated the policy of the department, which was to inventory that item along with his wallet. There's some dispute in the facts as to whether or not the plaintiff on his own was able to take the wallet and put it back in his pocket, or, as Deputy Braun stated, the nurse that came into the room helped him with that. Either way, what Deputy Braun did admit is that he saw Mark Rosario retake possession of the wallet. And therefore, both Deputy Braun and Deputy Winkler agreed that they violated the policy of the Sheriff's Department, which was to inventory and confiscate any personal property. As Your Honor correctly lays out, deliberate indifference here and the two-pronged test is at the heart of this matter. And that test and the threshold for deliberate indifference was established and is still established by the law of the land, the U.S. Supreme Court of Farmer v. Brennan. That two-pronged test requires, one, that the defendant subjectively is aware of a substantial risk of serious harm to plaintiff. This, in and of itself, this first prong of the test, is extremely difficult to prove. And in many of the jail cases where there are other inmates who are telling the jail personnel, this person may commit suicide, or days before the jail people themselves may think this person may commit suicide. Ultimately, if that jailer goes to that individual and says, "How are you feeling?" and that inmate says, "I'm doing all right, don't worry." In my mind and in the case law, I think that's enough to prevent the plaintiff in a case like that from proving that the defendant was subjectively aware of a substantial risk of serious harm. Here, that very, very high and difficult burden has been established. It was established when the deputies, and all three of them were aware that this had been done, Chapter 51, Mark Rosario. Through their early discussions with Mr. Rosario, when he's still communicative, because once he was Chapter 51, and this is important, he never again verbalizes one audible word to these deputies after being Chapter 51. So although he was talking about being a fire-breathing serpent, and he talked a lot about dying, it wasn't till his attempt at self-harm and suicide, when one of the deputies allowed him out of the car, and even though handcuffed, he somehow took off his glasses, he smashed them, he took the lenses out, and started to attempt to slash his wrists. At that point, Deputy Braun says, it's no longer a close call. I now know, pursuant to Chapter 5115, that this individual is, quote, has a substantial probability of physical harm to himself or herself as manifested by what he saw. So this first prong of the deliberate indifference test is at that point satisfied. And Deputy Winkler, who comes to the hospital room later, and Deputy Schwitz, who comes to transport Mark Rosario from the hospital to Winnebago Mental Health, all know that he is a Chapter 51.
But Schwitz, of course, doesn't know anything about this blade, right? Officer Schwitz.
Correct. He does not. He only comes for the transport.
And then it was Braun who saw the nurse give the wallet back to Rosario, not Winkler, who actually found this thing and didn't read it.
Correct. Braun testifies that the nurse gives it back to him and he sees it. The nurse testifies, no, it was actually Mark Rosario who himself took it and retook possession of it in front of both deputies.
Counsel, as you head into your discussion of the second prong, I'm really curious to know how you believe the conduct of the officer here in the handling of this foil packet constitutes intentional disregard. And what you believe intentional disregard means.
Well, I mean, I'm not, when you say intentional disregard, Your Honor, I think we have to couch this in terms of deliberate indifference, because there have been Seventh Circuit decisions that reference this intent. But we always have to anchor ourselves in the law of the land, which is Farmer. And Farmer, again, satisfies the two-pronged test. Was the defendant subjectively aware of a substantial risk of serious harm to plaintiff? And two, if aware of the risk, did they fail to take reasonable measures to abate it? So the Farmer case, which is the seminal case and is the law of the land, does not reference intent. It references references deliberate indifference, which is the two prongs. And that two-prong test has been, since 1996 through as recently as 06, in the estate of Cole by Pardue, estate of Novak, Sanville versus McCarty.
Don't we have to evaluate whether the steps the officers took were reasonable on the basis of what they actually knew at the time?
Absolutely. And that's
what... So if they can prove that they did not know about the danger, isn't it true that they'd be protected from liability even if the danger was obvious?
No, that second prong, Your Honor, has to be taken in the context of, is the first prong satisfied? And once that first prong is satisfied, and again, which is a very high burden and a very high threshold, once that is established, then in the context of having that established, you look at the second prong, which is, did they fail to take reasonable measures to abate it?
So how, in this instance, did they fail to take reasonable measures? When he had that foil packet in his hand, would he have then been required under that standard to open it and see what was inside it, to read it, based on all the circumstances where somebody said, this looks like a Band-Aid, it was very light, it certainly didn't feel like it was heavy enough to be anything that could have caused injury? Under the facts, how do you meet your standard?
Well, and again, I think it is the totality of the circumstances. And I think this would be a lot closer case if he hadn't seen the writing on the package. But to have a package that's unidentified, which he admits is unidentified, he sees writing on the package and decides not to read that writing. When after the fact in his deposition, when he sees scalpel blade, he admits, had I seen this, he never would have given it back to him. But that's only part of it. I mean, I don't want to say that this deliberate indifference rises or falls on that momentary aspect.
Don't we have to look at all the reasonable steps they took, you know, the searches that were taking place in the car, the fact that they took him to some house of worship to try to calm him down, and all the things that they did in the course of this thing. I mean, I agree with you. This was a huge tragedy. But when you look at the steps they were taking, and you're saying it's not just that examination of the envelope, but when you put it in the context of the fact that it was supposed to be inventory, I don't know, I just want you to point specifically to, you know, what your best facts are.
Well, but that, and that's always a point, Your Honor, and that was brought up in the Mombriquet case. And what Judge Crabb said is we can't take these random acts of kindness and say that that has any relevance to this two-pronged test of deliberate indifference. When I come back on rebuttal, I'll give you all the specific facts, Your Honors, in regard to why I think they satisfied that second prong. Thank you.
Actually, Counselor, your time has expired, but we'll give you a little bit more.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Bull.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the appellants. May it please the Court. The record below in the trial court demonstrates that all of the officers demonstrated an unusually high degree of compassion and care for Mark Rosario. The record abundantly supports the trial judge's conclusion that from the moment Defendant Braun came to contact with Rosario, he and then later the other deputies took actions which were designed to ensure that Rosario would not hurt himself or others. In fact, Your Honors, I believe the record below demonstrates a level of care and compassion that very few law enforcement agencies would have the resources to affect in a case like this.
Here the officers knew there was an imminent threat of suicide because he, you know, smashed the glasses, tried to cut himself there. I mean, wasn't failure to read the surgical blade packet a failure to take reasonable steps?
Absolutely not. And, Your Honor, the officers concluded under Wisconsin Statute 5115 that Mr. Rosario was a danger to himself or others. The attempted suicide with the glasses that were smashed, as described in the record, was feeble at best. We're not disputing the fact that Mr. Rosario was an appropriate candidate for 5115. He was a danger to himself or others, and he had made a suicide attempt. But, Your Honor, I think there are two facts that are conceded that makes the analysis in this case, frankly, fairly simple. It was conceded, number one, in the trial court, in response to proposed findings of fact, that the officers did not know that the small packet contained a razor blade. That was conceded. It was also conceded at trial court in response to proposed findings of fact that the officers had never seen a small foil packet containing a surgical blade like that. In addition to those two concessions, there is evidence in the record, there is testimony in the record from two medical doctors, a Dr. Spiro and a Dr. Erickson, all in the record, where these two medical doctors said they weren't familiar with scalpel blades being put in small foil packets like this, that typically a scalpel, the kind of scalpel that's used in surgeries today, comes with a long, hollow handle, and it doesn't look anything at all like what the officer picked up. And Your Honors can look at the physical evidence in the record, and I submit to you that it looks like a Band-Aid. It looks like the kind of Band-Aid many of us may have in our desk drawers when we get a paper cut. That's what it looks like. The officers had no reason to believe it was anything else. This tragic occurrence was the result of a number of small mistakes that were made by different officers at different times. The first mistake was probably that the small wallet was not discovered during the initial pat-down when the large wallet was discovered. The second mistake was when the contents of the foil packet were not identified to be what they in fact were. The third mistake was when the wallet was not inventoried, as was Officer Winkler's intent. And the fourth mistake, Your Honors, was that Mr. Rosario was handcuffed in front of his torso instead of following proper procedure, handcuffing him behind. Now, the officers testified that they handcuffed him in front because it was a long ride. to Winnebago Mental Health, and they wanted him to be comfortable. Your Honors, the acid test, the absolute acid test, that these officers were not deliberately indifferent and had no suspicion that Mr. Rosario had a razor blade, is that the presence of the razor blade, the surgical blade, in Mr. Rosario's possession posed just as much of a threat to the officers as it did to Mr. Rosario. Put yourself in the position of the officers. They're transporting a man to a mental facility who has just told them that he thinks he's transforming into a fire-breathing water serpent. If they had any inkling that this gentleman had a sharp weapon on him, they certainly would have done something, if only for their own protection. Your Honors, in addition to all these factors, the record is completely devoid of any motive as to why these officers would wish Mr. Rosario ill. As a matter of fact, the record is compelling that they were doing everything they could to keep him from hurting himself.
Is motive an element?
No, Your Honor, but it certainly corroborates the fact that there was no deliberate indifference. In many cases like this, there would be cause for some hostility between the officers and the detainee. Perhaps the detainee is a suspected criminal. Perhaps the detainee has been hostile. None of those things are present in this case.
How old was Mr. Rosario?
Your Honor, I can't answer that. It's in the record. I believe he was around 30, but I would refer you to the record for that. What the appellee is trying to do in this case is to convert the deliberate indifferent standard into pure negligence. That's not the law. The officers found themselves in the exact same position that was described in the Farmer case on page 838. An officer's failure to alleviate a significant risk that he should have perceived but did not, while no cause for commendation, cannot under our cases be condemned as the infliction of punishment. Now, if I understand the argument that's been made by the plaintiff appellee in the briefs, the plaintiff is arguing from a district court case in the Western District of Wisconsin, the Mombriquette case, that there is a single sentence on page 637 of the Mombriquette case that converts, in this context, deliberate indifference into pure negligence. The sentence is not as clearly drafted as perhaps it could have been, but if that's what the district court judge in the Western District was saying, that is simply contradicted by the Supreme Court law on Farmer and by this court's decisions interpreting deliberate indifference. But beyond that, the facts in the Mombriquette case are wildly different than the facts in this case. In the Mombriquette case, a person suspected of being a suicide threat was discharged from a hospital, and the specific instructions from the hospital were, put this person on a suicide watch. The jail nurse testified that she read the instructions. The detainee was not put on a suicide watch, and the detainee hung herself with serious consequences. That's not this case at all. Now, that concludes my argument, but I would like to address any questions that you may have.
I would ask, do you agree, given the case law in the Seventh Circuit, that the officers do not enjoy qualified immunity if there's a finding of deliberate indifference?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. In order to defeat qualified immunity, the plaintiffs have to show that there was a clearly established right of which the officers were aware. In this case, it is inconceivable what that right might be, and none is suggested in the plaintiff appellee's brief. Could there, for example, be a clearly established right to have the contents of your wallet be read when you are brought into custody? That's ludicrous. In another context, in a criminal context, the law might argue that there was a right to not have your artifacts be read. Is there a clearly established right to have the officers that arrest you be familiar with surgical instruments that are so arcane that even medical doctors can't recognize them? Even if there was deliberate indifference, there was no violation of a clearly established right.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I'll give you a couple minutes.
Thank you very much. Attorney Bull, as he did in Mombriquet, wants to change the law of the land, which is Farmer. He wants this court to find that even though by stipulation the first prong of the test has been established, he wants his deputies in this case to be able to act and react unreasonably, which is what they did. As Your Honor pointed out, motive is not an issue. Knowledge is not an issue. What Farmer establishes is that once that first of the two-prong test is established, it then becomes a question of did they fail to take reasonable measures to abate it? And I assume he would agree that the record clearly establishes that these deputies could read, because that's all they needed to do to act reasonably in this case was to read two words on that package, surgical blade. They failed to find the wallet containing the surgical blade. At the hospital, when they found the wallet, although having the surgical blade, the instrument of death, in hand, they failed to identify it. Having it in hand, recognizing that they didn't identify it, they refused to read the writing that they saw on it, and that was Deputy Winkler's testimony. Both deputies in the room decided to violate known policy and not confiscate the wallet containing the labeled surgical blade package. Both deputies in the hospital room decided not only to not confiscate the wallet, but allowed Rosario to retake possession of it. On the ride from West Bend Hospital to Winnebago Mental Health, although only 2 feet away from the plaintiff, Deputy Braun decides not to maintain visual contact with Mr. Rosario, allowing him to reach in his pocket, to pull out the wallet, to take out the blade, to undo the package, to make numerous cuts both ways on both wrists, to make numerous hesitation cuts on both sides of his neck before slicing his throat from ear to ear.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much for the additional time, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.